Welcome to Coffee House Shots. I'm Tom Goodenough and I'm joined by my colleagues Isabel Hardman and James Forsyth. Now, we've all just heard Jeremy Corbyn's curtain closer at Labour's party conference this year. Isabel, what did you make of what he had to say?
Well, I thought it was a much better speech than the one, the sort of rambling one that he gave last year. He had two clear aims. One was to say to his critics, I'm still here and I'm going to do things my way, so you need to shut up. And then to say to the membership that this is what you elected me to do. And what he wants to do basically is to talk about the things he's been talking about for the past 20 years. There was only really one mention of the sort of the modern world in his speech where he mentioned broadband. But actually, he could have given this speech at any stage in his time as an MP, because it really referred to the concerns of those from his political faction over the years. And I did wonder whether that meant that actually some of those around him who share his politics but are a little more up to date and a little more politically agile might find that they actually differ from him on quite a lot of things, mainly because they're interested in now, in not just broadband, in driverless cars and all of those things that are interesting sort of forward-looking politicians.
His speech went down well in the conference hall itself. Like, he received a standing ovation at the end, but how about people outside the hall? Do you think there was anything in there that might appeal to the wider public?
Well, he did say that the task was to convince the unconvinced now, but he doesn't think in the same way as his Labour colleagues about how to convince people. He did talk about immigration, so he sees these topics that are of concern, such as immigration, such as insecure work, but then he gives his very own solution to those concerns, what ones that many of his colleagues feel have been tried and tested in elections and that have caused Labour to lose elections, such as not talking about curbs on immigration, as many of his Labour colleagues have been doing.
And James, what did you make of Jeremy's speech?
I think there's always a danger of a soft bigotry of low expectations when it comes to Jeremy Corbyn as leader of the opposition. You know, if he does a half decent job at PMQs, you know, we hail it as his best performance yet. And if he gives a kind of vaguely, you know, if he gives a speech that the delivery is all right on, we all say, oh, that was a magnificent speech. And I mean, there's a danger that we fall into that trap with this speech. You know, to be honest with you, it was probably, if you were not grading on a curve, it was probably up there with some of Ed Miliband's kind of off-year efforts. That's about the quality we're pitching at, you know. There was some clever internal politics when he basically said, we'll never persuade the country if we're a divided party. And so therefore ask the moderates to kind of give up the trench warfare and come back on side. That means that if they don't, and I suspect that they won't be able to, he will then be able to blame them for Labour's defeat in 2020. There was the odd joke about Virgin Trains, you know, his leadership campaign foe. And there were some attempts to have some kind of policies on housing that you can see might have some appeal out in the country. But I thought broadly it was a missed opportunity. First of all, as Isabel says, it was a kind of dated speech. You know, he talked about 21st century socialism, but there wasn't that much 21st century specific in his recipe. And then on Brexit, I thought he achieved neither thing. He didn't speak to the 48% of the country who voted for in and who are worried about leaving the EU. But nor did he speak, because of his kind of refusal to countenance any curbs on immigration, to those traditional Labour voters or former Labour voters who voted out in the referendum. I also thought something quite interesting there, because he said that he wanted the freedom to intervene to support industries, which essentially means getting around the kind of EU state aid rules, which I think is a further confirmation that Jeremy Corbyn doesn't want to stay in the single market. And that's another sign that all the political tides are moving in the direction of hard Brexit.
Were there any kind of surprises you thought with what he said, James?
But Jeremy Corbyn is not a surprising politician. You know, those people who were standing there waiting for the kind of dash to the centre were going to be disappointed. There wasn't an attempt to present Jeremy Corbyn as a new, different kind of politician. You know, I mean, there were lots of his staples, you know, stopping arms exports to the Saudi Arabians, an apology on behalf of the party for Iraq. You know, as Isabella has said in her analysis on Coffee House, these were lots of the traditional staples of Jeremy Corbyn and his wing of the party.
And Isabel, he described those people in the shadow cabinet at the moment as the future. Do you think there was anything in that that was a slight dig to those that have left or the moderates in the party?
Oh, absolutely. The first point at which he addressed the turmoil in the party over the past few months was when he asked very pointedly conference to applaud the shadow cabinet, those who'd chosen to serve. And later again, he called on the whole party to unite. And there was a sort of, it was probably the angriest part of his speech when he slightly roared at the conference hall about the need for everyone to pull together. It was a sort of, I almost expected him to go a little bit further and tell people to shut the hell up, basically. And that was a message to the moderates. Now, based on the way the moderates have behaved at conference over the past few days, I don't think they're going to heed that call. If anything, they seem to have more fire in their bellies. A lot of them are very, very miserable privately. But the panels that I've gone to and conversations that I've seen them having with activists who've been really upbraiding them for their behaviour over the past few months, a lot of them, such as Caroline Flint, Chris Leslie, Gavin Shuker, seem very, very keen to take on the idea that they've caused Labour's woes and very, very keen to keep saying all the things that are going wrong for Labour, which completely contradicts what Jeremy Corbyn has urged them to do today. I don't even think there's going to be a period of silence and reflection or an apparent period of silence and reflection. I suspect actually that they're quite keen to take on people, a sort of there was a cartoon in one of the newspapers which said deselect me at your peril, and I think that's the stance that a lot of those leading moderates are taking. It's basically, we're going to keep making this argument because it's right.
James, is that something that you agree with? Do you think that the cracks are already starting to show?
I don't mean the cracks never went away, because I don't think that the fundamental point is that they do not believe that Jeremy Corbyn can either win an election or provide an effective opposition to the Conservative government in the House of Commons. So they are going to carry on doing their own thing. They're going to carry on trying to take back the party. Now, they have obviously spectacularly miscalculated in that a leadership challenge that was meant to weaken Jeremy Corbyn has ended up strengthening him, has ended up boosting his position. And then there was also this problem for them, which is 83% of the people who joined the party since 2015 support Jeremy Corbyn in these leadership contests. And there are over 100,000 people who joined the party in the last 6 months but couldn't vote in the leadership contest because you had to be a member for 6 months beforehand. So, you know, there is a problem there, and that Corbyn will carry on recruiting more members and their chances of taking back control will continue to slip away. I think what we haven't yet heard is any kind of credible moderate plan for how they actually could win a leadership election.
So, Isabel, that's Jeremy Corbyn's speech, but how about more generally at the conference? How do you think this has gone? Has this been the kind of show of unity that some had hoped for, or is it just a more sign there's business as usual and the turmoil is still there?
I don't think any of us were surprised that this was a difficult week for the Labour Party and that there are lots of people at this conference who disagree on how the party should move forward. And it's not at all surprising that the moderates were unhappy with the re-election of Jeremy Corbyn. I think I was quite surprised that it wasn't more of an emotional, vicious conference, actually. I was expecting more standoffs between the two factions, and there weren't as many of those, really. I think that mostly sort of passionate debates rather than angry shouting matches, which is to the credit of both sides, I guess. Two things stood out for me. One is quite how prepared Labour is to appear like a party that doesn't want to talk about realistic government. So the thing that really epitomised that for me was the announcement that the party would scrap tests for disability benefit. Now, I've written quite a lot about the work capability assessment and the flaws with that, particularly for people with fluctuating conditions and mental health problems. And that there's been a huge amount of press on this, and the government has had to row back on a number of aspects of that test. So it is not a good test. But the idea that you would scrap testing altogether shows that Labour is prepared to suggest that it would just hand out benefits even if people were not eligible for them, which is something that no responsible government should do, and that doesn't help those who actually need the benefits because it raises the overall bill and raises the temptation to cut the benefit. So it's a completely sort of pie in the sky idea. I was really surprised, actually, well, not surprised, I was disappointed that the party thought that this was the way of solving the Kafkaesque nightmare of the work capability assessment is just to get rid of it rather than to try practically to improve it. The other thing that really struck me was that actually the biggest row of the conference was not between, you know, Blairite MP and Jeremy Corbyn or something like that. It was actually between him and his Shadow Defence Secretary, Clive Lewis, who is reported to have punched a wall after a section on Trident was removed from his speech just as he was about to give it. And Lewis then basically repeated that section in an interview with The Guardian, in which he said that Labour wouldn't try, he wouldn't try to change Labour's current multilateralist position on nuclear weapons. Now, that's a really interesting split with Jeremy Corbyn, who has spent all of his life campaigning against nuclear weapons, and an interesting split in particular with Seamus Milne, Jeremy Corbyn's communications advisor. And I think we might start to see an interesting fracturing in the hard left as well as within the wider Labour Party.
And James, how would you summarise the conference?
I was struck by, as kind of follows on from kind of Isabel's point about a serious policy, I suppose, I was struck by how difficult Labour found it to get coverage. I thought it was striking that on Monday, the first issue of The Guardian after Jeremy Corbyn's re-election, the Labour Party and the Labour conference wasn't the splash. And the coverage of Labour in what Labour activists love to call the right-wing press, it hasn't really been vicious, it's been mocking. You know, there is a sense that we are witnessing a once great political party, you know, walking off into the sunset. And I think what has happened is that Labour has essentially become, and Corbyn almost alluded to this in his speech when he talked about how, across the West, the post-crash environment has created new political parties, at which point you think of Syriza in Greece or Podemos in Spain, but that Labour have managed to become that party. And I mean, that is true. Labour has now become a kind of socialist party, much further to the left than the Labour Party normally is on the electoral spectrum. And I don't see that changing. And I think that means that Labour will have a declining relevance, because I struggle to see how you win a British general election, especially with Scotland returning overwhelmingly nationalist MPs from that position.
This has felt much more like a Lib Dem conference, actually, than a Labour Party conference. The only real difference is that the Labour conference doesn't yet have its own songbook with silly songs about its MPs driving around in taxis like the Lib Dems do about Simon Hughes.